It's late at night, and tennis player Billie Jean King, played by Emma Stone, is in a motel bed when she gets a phone call.
Listen, I had a great idea.
That's Steve Carell in the role of fellow athlete Bobby Riggs. He's calling from a telephone booth, and his idea is super annoying. He's challenging her to an actual battle of the sexes on the tennis court.
Are you drunk, Bobby?
No, of course not. How about this? Man versus woman. Male chauvinist pig versus hairy-legged feminist. No offense. You're still a feminist, right?
No, I'm a tennis player who happens to be a woman.
That's right. That's exactly who you are. And I am a tennis player who happens to be a man. Who says that he can beat any woman on the planet?
A battle of the sexes on the tennis court, promoted in pretty much the way that character just described, really did happen. It was a televised contest to see essentially whether women could cut it in sports. If you're old enough to remember the 1970s, you know that. But for those of us too young to remember it, the whole thing sounds insane. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And today we're giving Battle of the Sexes the screen time treatment. Later in the show, we'll hear from a Kansas City woman trying to break into the world of football today, and film critic Russ Simmons from Fox 4 News, who interviewed the actors as well as Billie Jean King. But first, a history lesson. For that, Katie Batza joins us from KU. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Gina. Thanks for having me.
So what do we need to understand maybe about 1973, just the general state of like gender issues at that time, to maybe understand this a little better?
Sure. Well, so in the early 1970s, the experience women had was very different than what we have today, not surprisingly. First of all, simple things like labor laws were very, very different. That started to shift in the early 1960s, starting with the Civil Rights Act and the Equal Pay Act. But women were not allowed to work the same number of hours as men. They were easily denied jobs, even if they were able to prove that they were able to complete simple tasks for a job. And even they were allowed to be denied jobs if they had small children, preschool-age children.
So, and that was like a thing you could ask during a job interview?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, Help Wanted ads, it wasn't until 1973, the same year as the Battle of the Sexes, that the Supreme Court ruled that you couldn't have Help Wanted ads just for women and just for men. And if you go back and look at some of the Help Wanted ads from the 1960s and the 1970s, you see that they're not just Help Wanted for women and for men, but they're for unmarried women with this particular hairstyle or this particular build.
And I'm guessing there weren't Help Wanted signs for men with particular hairstyles?
No, there were not. Absolutely. So it was a very different, sexism was literally written into the labor laws. And so when we think about the Battle of the Sexes, it actually comes about as much about a sporting event as about a larger discussion of women's capacity to work and earn the same amount of money.
Something that I really hadn't heard before, and forgive me, I mean, I feel sort of naive because this is just a few years before I was born. This is not ancient history by any means. I'm surprised that it was so recent that there were limits on the number of hours women could work.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? So 1965, the Supreme Court case, Weeks versus Southern Bell, and this was a holdover from the early 20th century, one of the first, with the big labor push in the early 20th century, women thought it would be helpful to try and limit their hours by saying, hey, it's not okay for us to work 6 days a week, 12 hours a day. But they made that case on the fact that they were going to need their bodies to be in good shape so that they could bear children and raise children. And so they thought that that would initially kind of break into the labor movement and allow all workers to make similar cases, but it really just stuck for women all the way through until the late 1960s and 1970s.
So culturally, I mean, when people first heard that there was going to be a battle of the sexes on the tennis court wherein one man and one woman would, in contest, sort of answer the question of whether women belonged on the same proverbial playing field as men. I mean, how did that sit with people?
Right. So this is a moment of extreme social turmoil, for lack of a better term, right? I mean, the Vietnam War had ended or was winding down pretty significantly by 1973, but, you know, the Summer of Love had happened in 1967. There were, you know, hippies all over the place. The National Organization for Women had just opened up a few years before. And so there was definitely a lot of conversation about women's roles and what they were capable of. And this was one more instance in which women were trying to prove that they were capable. And so there was certainly part spectacle. But it was definitely part of a larger conversation and shift in how women wanted themselves to be understood in society.
Did anyone, I mean, is it your sense that anyone saw this as absurd?
I think Billie Jean King did. I think many feminists did. Certainly the way in which it was framed by Riggs, we see a lot of sexism just in the premise, right, and the buildup around it. There's no way that a woman could build a man, and the amount of pressure that Billie Jean King must have felt going onto the court. I'm grateful that I don't have to experience that. But I think there were a number of people who thought it was absurd, but also a number of people who really genuinely were interested, and it felt like a good gauge of, are women really capable of doing all of that they say they can?
I want to talk about this idea of absurdity a little more. I'm going to bring our film critic, Russ Simmons, on this. Fox 4 News sent him to L.A. to interview not just the actors in Battle of the Sexes, but Billie Jean King herself. Hi, Russ.
Hi, good morning.
So you watched the match between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs on TV, and during your interview, you told Billie Jean King what you remembered about it.
Right. I remembered something you just brought up, which was the circus atmosphere that really surrounded it. And I remember they were playing the song, Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better. And they had, you know, all of the pomp and circumstance. It was really ridiculous. But when they got on the court, it was all business because they knew how important it was. And that's what I asked Billie Jean King about.
Okay, so let's hear Billie Jean King responding to that observation.
Oh, it was serious.
Yeah.
I know, but that's what makes it great. It was serious. It stood for social change, but you want to give the people a good time around it too.
Sure.
And that I'm big for that. I'm big on entertainment because we are entertainers. It's, you know, that 76 by 36 court, that's my stage. Let me have it. I want to go out on stage. It's like theater.
So, Katie, I mean, thinking about the context of the time and how serious some of these issues were, is that effective? Is it theater? It's theater, but there's something also so real.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is incredibly effective, and we see that the proof is kind of in the pudding. Billie Jean King, right around the same time, is starting to create a women's professional tennis circuit that we see today with the Women's Tennis Association. So, and all of that was about getting equal pay, right? Before this, even if when Billie Jean King won Wimbledon for the first time, she made $700-something dollars versus the male winner who won over $2,000. So pretty significant differences that could be as much as 12 to 1 in prize winning. So it was about high consequence, but definitely using this stage, as she says, as a sport, to kind of get people invested, give them a good time, but also prove a point.
What do you think is the legacy of this match? Is there a legacy of this match in particular, or does the match more just like capture a moment in our society?
I think it captures a moment that speaks to the larger surroundings, but it also is a very significant moment where many of the men who were watching this match and were really invested in Riggs showing Billie Jean King, you know, what a man could really do and should do and his place and all of that sort of stuff, they really had to kind of step back and think, oh my gosh, this kind of changes everything. This is a public throwdown that Riggs lost.
Well, Katie Batza, Russ Simmons, stay with me. We're going to get right back to talking a little more about the movie Battle of the Sexes, starring Emma Stone and Steve Carell. I'm Gina Kaufman, back in a minute. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we were just putting the 1973 tennis match between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs, the Battle of the Sexes, in context as far as what was going on in women's rights back then. We've been doing that with Katie Batza, Assistant Professor of Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies at KU. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
Now, let's hear more about the movie about the whole ordeal starring Emma Stone and Steve Carell. For that, Russ Simmons with us from Fox 4 News. Hi, Russ.
Good to see you.
So, Russ, this whole story, this insane story to me about a man challenging a woman to a tennis match in his mind to prove it once and for all that men are better than women at sports, it seems like just the perfect setup for a movie.
Well, they did a good job with it. You know, one thing that I learned from this movie, however, which was different than my initial perception, was that Bobby Riggs wasn't necessarily the male chauvinist pig jerk that he came off as at the time. He was more like a wrestling promoter, or, you know, he was going to play the bad guy enough so that he would generate enough interest, get enough people to hate him or cheer him on.
He was a reality TV producer before his time.
Absolutely right. Yeah. And Billie Jean King straightened me out, because I told her that was my perception. She says, oh, no, he was not like that at all. As a matter of fact, they remained close friends until his death.
Tell me more about him and what was motivating him.
He was a gambler and had a lot of debts, and he also felt cheated in a lot of ways, because he was a tennis champion in 1939, and then the war broke out, and then he had this lull period where he would have been the time of his life where he would have made the most money in his career, and he never had the opportunity to do that. So it was like, here was his opportunity now in the 70s to make a big payday, and he was going to take advantage of it if he could.
So tell me about both the actors who played these characters and what the characters themselves represent on screen, like what works about them. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And maybe what doesn't.
Yeah. Emma Stone, I think, is terrific. Both of these actors are very good, and they are charismatic, and they embody the roles very well. Emma is showing how much pressure that Billie Jean King was under, not only because of the feminism and women's rights and all the things that were surrounding that and the injustices in terms of pay, but also her own sexual awakening. You know, she was under pressure because she was a married woman, and all of a sudden she was having an affair with another woman. And this was all happening surrounding the match, which was going to be seen by millions of people around the world. Bobby Riggs, on the other hand, was deep in debt, and he needed to find a way to get back on top. And so all these different dynamics were playing out separately, but they all came in to help emphasize on why the match was so important.
It is sort of like, I think people trying to imagine Steve Carell as a tennis player have trouble with that.
I understand that he's really very good in real life. And but Bobby Riggs, if you will look at them physically, you'll see if you look at the old footage and you look at what Steve Carell is doing, they look very, very similar, actually. And Emma Stone had never hardly picked up a racket, from what I understand. And she had to really go through very rigorous training and work with Billie Jean and other people to get the look right. And I did ask them who would win in a real match, and Steve Carell said, never bet against Emma Stone.
Well, so, you know, during the movie, there is this scene from the press conference leading up to the match, and what you see on screen that you cannot hear in this clip is that Billie Jean King is kind of having fun right alongside Bobby Riggs, as played by these actors, hamming up the whole contest. But then she looks out at this sea of male journalists who are laughing at Bobby's jokes and by extension at her, and her face kind of changes. Let's give this exchange a listen.
I love women in the bedroom and in the kitchen, but these days they want to be everywhere. They want to be doing everything. Where is it going to end? Pretty soon us fellas aren't going to be able to go to a ball game. We're not going to be able to go fishing. We're not going to be able to stop and have a drink after work. And that's what this whole women's lit thing is about. And it's got to stop. And Bobby Riggs is the man to stop it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Custer's last stand. This is the lobber versus the liver.
Keep talking, Bobby.
The more nonsense you spout, the worse it's going to be when you lose.
Well, I'm the ladies' number one. I'm the champ. Why would I lose?
Because dinosaurs can't play tennis.
Yeah. Russ, I want to hear from you, but first, Katie, I mean, as a professor who studies women's studies, like, what is this exchange about to you?
To me, it seems like a very hammed up version of sexism, like a clear articulation of it, like a banter back and forth. It's clear that they're both kind of invested in amping this up. But also, these kinds of conversations still exist in my classrooms, in fact, just in slightly different and less kind of bombastic ways.
Well, what does the less bombastic version of this conversation in 2017 sound like?
It sounds a lot like, well, I think women have everything that they need. There really isn't any need for feminism anymore. You know, sexism no longer exists. It's kind of a denial of the existence of inequality, even though on the other side of it, it's like, well, how come women make X cents more for every dollar that the man makes? Or how come, you know, everybody comments on what I wear today, whereas you can wear sweatpants to class every day and no one says anything, right? Those kinds of back and forth that can be, you know, equally testy. But I think things have changed pretty dramatically in some very measurable ways, but in other ways, the underlying sexism still exists.
The thing that struck me about the scene just as a woman in 2017 is the way Emma Stone's face kind of, you see her kind of wincing a little bit when the camera shows all these men laughing at Bobby's jokes. But then when it's time for her to actually respond, she manages to laugh along with them. And instead of making any of the kinds of arguments you're talking about, like about how men get paid more than women and why is that fair or anything like that, she doesn't address the fairness. She just laughs and says, you know, keep on talking, Bobby. She doesn't let herself get sucked in. And that seems like a pretty important thing for a lot of people, you know?
Certainly. I think, you know, part of that is what you have to do when you're an athlete, I would imagine, is that you just kind of have to keep your head where it needs to be. But also, I think that there's a reality, just preservation's sake, sometimes it's better to just kind of step back and say, I see where I'm not changing any minds here. I'm just going to have to show you.
Russ, there are scenes, though, where this character does engage in a more direct kind of confrontation. Tell us about those scenes a little bit.
The confrontations between Bobby and Billie Jean?
More between her and, like, management-level people.
Ah, yes. Yes. There was a guy who was named Jack Kramer, played by Bill Pullman in the movie, who was the head of the American Tennis Professionals Association. And she was talking about the reasons that she wanted to be paid more, that she thought the women should be paid more. And he said, well, women aren't as good as men. Women don't play as well. And plus, men have obligations, you know, family obligations and things like that. And she said, well, I'm the breadwinner in my family here. But she said, the real point is we put as many bottoms in the seats as the men do. And that should be your decision-making process, you know, when it comes to how much people are paid, not by whether we're better or worse than men.
Russ, did you like this movie? Do you think that it did lived up to the potential of the basic premise?
I did enjoy the film. I think it's very entertaining. I don't know. I can't say that it lived up to its potential because it could have been a lot better than it was. But as is.
How? What should have been better about it?
It could have been riveting. Instead, it's comically funny and sweet, and which is okay. You know, I hate to criticize a film for what it isn't as opposed to what it is, but I think it's going to be a crowd pleaser in any event.
Katie, do you think it's a good or bad thing for us to be maybe like laughing in the audience rather than, I don't know, enraged?
You know, I think laughing is an important part of rage, actually. I think laughing is having people have these conversations, even if they're laughing about them, and hopefully they'll go home and realize, wow, these pay inequities still exist to some form or another, right, both within professional tennis and elsewhere, and these forms of sexism do exist. So I think I always think it's good to have people laugh because it means that they are engaging in something, and hopefully it will kind of sow the seeds for further thought and criticism and maybe future rage. I don't know.
Well, Russ, we've talked about the fact that you got to interview Billie Jean King. What was it like for you to meet her?
I was thrilled. You know, she's always been kind of a hero of sorts, and she gave me an autographed tennis ball, which now has an honored place on my mantle. But she kind of was the personification of how to handle pressure. And that's what I think I admired more than anything else. But one thing I would like to point out real quickly is that one of the great things that the movies do is draw parallels between the past and the present.
Before we get to that, I mean, mm-hmm. that's exactly, I want to play one more clip from your interview
sure.
with her. You asked her to tell you why the story still resonates today. And let's give our listeners a chance to hear what she said.
I just think it was relevant because it showed the times, but you know what? It's still relevant.
Right.
That's what's important. I want the younger generations to look at this movie, saw how it was, because we all stand on the shoulders of the people before us. Like, I stand on many people's shoulders as well, if you go back. And then I want them to really continue this fight of social change, of equality and freedom, always, for everyone.
Yeah, that kind of sums it up. You know, one of the things that, as I was saying, that the movies can show how movies resonate, or the themes resonate today, even though the action took place a long time ago. And I was thinking back to a movie that came out earlier this summer called Detroit, which was about the riots that took place in Detroit in 1967. And you would think that, oh, we're in a post-racial world. No, we've had an African-American president since then. But if you look at that and you look at the things that are happening today, that the action from Detroit could have happened yesterday. And that's the same thing with this film. I think that we could certainly have a battle of the sexes now and no woman would blink, sadly.
Katie, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think it's a very timely film. I know that these sorts of things, they take years and years to create and produce and all of that sort of stuff, but particularly in this moment, as so many women's rights issues are being debated again, you know, now it's less about labor laws and more about reproductive justice. But labor laws still exist. Matters of pay and equality are still very much on the forefront of the national political scene as well as the local ones.
I mean, see the 2016 presidential election? I mean, could a person see that as a modern day battle of the sexes?
As an oversimplification, sure, yes. I think in some ways, absolutely, sexism certainly played a part. But I think there's also a whole bunch of other layers there. But yeah, I think sexism absolutely existed and shaped at least the conversations around that election, if not the election itself. But I think you could make a pretty compelling case that it was also a pretty big factor in the actual vote tallies.
So as far as your students are concerned, I mean, do you think that this story has been surprising to them about Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs? Or do you think, like Russ kind of said, like this could happen today and no one would bat an eye?
Yeah, I think that they would not be surprised that it had happened in the past, because for my students, I think they think, oh, all the bad things were happening back then and now we're so evolved. And yet I think a film like this and a discussion like this makes them reflect on the moment to realize, oh man, we've come a long way, but we also haven't come very far at all.
Well, Katie Batza with us from KU and film critic Russ Simmons, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In just a minute, we'll be back with a woman who's living this story today. She wants to level the playing ground, not in tennis, but football. And before we go, we'll also hear about a high school teacher trying to combat sexual assault through hip hop. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard. Let's get back to our conversation about women in sports, inspired by the movie Battle of the Sexes, starring Emma Stone and Steve Carell. When we left off, Billie Jean King had been telling film critic Russ Simmons that she wanted this movie to be made to inspire a new generation to take up the mantle of social justice. So now let's talk about what's changed and what hasn't with Nance Wernis of the KC Storm. If you don't know what that is, it's the local women's football league. Hi, Nance.
Hi.
Does the fact that I have to tell people what KC Storm is say something in and of itself?
Yeah, it certainly does. The Kansas City Storm's first season was in 2005, and there's still a lot of folks locally that when I'm out and about talking about it, they'll say, I didn't know that there was a women's football team.
Why don't we know?
Well, I think that there's a lack of focus on women and women's sports. I think that's prevalent even here today, where you consider in Kansas City a lot of talk about the Royals as they close their season out this weekend, and the recent soccer victories with the KC Sporting winning their championship. But there's not a lot of talk or press about the women's WNBA. They're in their great series right now, their championship series, and you just don't see that. So I think that's a little frustrating that the press doesn't pick up and give more due to the women's sports.
How did you get into football?
Well, honestly, it's a game that I always loved and I always wanted to play, but didn't have a really good chance to do that growing up. There was even after Title IX, there's high school and college football is really orientated toward the men. And I have had players that have tried to play in high school and college, and they've been hazed or discouraged from doing that, even when they could be competitive. And so I think that what I wanted to do was provide women a chance to do that, is to participate in a sport that's very popular, and they've only maybe been able to watch in the past, which was my situation. Loved the game, loved to watch the game, learned a lot from that, but never got a chance to play other than with the guys and the boys in the neighborhood, you know, in the street and so forth. And so being able to provide that opportunity for women is what, you know, was key to me, and it's been quite a driver in my energies around that, you know, for over a decade now.
I mean, you talked about being into sports as a kid and playing with the boys in the neighborhood. You know, it makes me think of now. I have a niece who I think she's about 9 now, and she doesn't live in Kansas City, but she wanted to play baseball because her family was watching baseball a lot at home, and her parents were like, well, you know, you could play softball. And she's like, no, I want to play baseball. So they got her on a baseball team, mm-hmm. and she just didn't think anything of it. But I mean, playing football on the streets with the neighborhood boys, mm-hmm. did you think anything of that?
Well, you know, it was something that I wanted to do and there was an interest. And because I could hold my own and can prove myself, then I was kind of allowed to do that, or I was accepted. And I think that's difficult for women trying to compete with men to be accepted and to, you know, be able to have those same experiences in those activities.
When you say you could hold your own, what do you mean?
I could be competitive. I could play. I was good. They wanted me on their team, you know. And so that kind of helped pave the way to be being accepted and being able to participate. My hats are off to your niece for wanting to play baseball. It's very common for the little girls to radiate towards softball. But if you consider the history of softball, that was not considered the women's game when it first started. It was basically a game for baseball players that wanted to play in the off season, and they were trying to find ways to modify the game to play in a gymnasium. And that's what was the genesis of softball. And it was never supposed to be a women's game, but it's kind of become that. And so I applaud anybody that wants to, you know, kind of buck the system and play baseball as a girl or a woman.
When you were sort of an athletic kid, did people around you support and encourage your interest in sports?
You know, I was very lucky in that I did have a support structure. My mother was very supportive, and my middle school gym teacher was a male, but was very supportive of that. And he would, as a gym teacher, even in the as I was growing up in grade school, he would separate the kids in the gym, and the girls would do hopscotch and jump rope and foursquare, and you take the boys out to the field, and they would do a modified version of soccer and football and so forth. And so I would go with the boys, and because I could hold my own, he allowed that. And there, I wasn't the only one, but there was a couple of us that did that, and we were accepted. And so I was fortunate enough to have adults that would foster that and advocate and allow that. I know a lot
but
of women
even though the
didn't.
Structure itself was sort of like rigged.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I never learned hopscotch, though, but I can catch a ball, so catch football.
Do you think that there were girls in your class who weren't going off with the boys who might have found that they excelled in some things had they been given the chance, just rather than having to advocate for it, or you know what I mean? Be an exception to the rule.
Exactly. I think there's a lot of women that missed that opportunity, and I think it's because of the social mores of the time. And hopefully those are breaking down, and we are more accepting and more allow that more, and kind of lets the girls see the broader perspective of what their opportunities are and what's available to them.
So when you kind of like crossed over in gym class and played the sports with the boys, did you get treated fairly, or did you face any kind of, I don't know, different treatment?
Exactly. Well, I think I was fine. And like I said, because I held my own and people wanted me on their team and they saw me as a asset, I was fortunate enough to have that experience. A lot of women and a lot of girls don't. And that's where it's difficult to hear those stories. And even when women come to play with the Storm, they want to play football, and maybe they tried or even they did in high school or in college, but they have bad stories. It's not a meaningful experience. They were hazed or made to be difficult. And so it's nice to be able to provide that opportunity for women to play sport that even after Title IX, they really don't have a meaningful a meaningful experience when they do get to participate in the educational things. So, you know, I have a quote that talks about that the benefits of athletic sporting achievement and so forth, the benefits don't stop when you get out of school, so that the opportunity shouldn't either. So that's why I want to provide the opportunity for adult women just the same as when they're in schools and somewhat protected by Title IX.
When you talk about Title IX, I mean, do you remember when Title IX came into existence?
Yes, I do. I do. And I was probably a benefactor in high school, they started a volleyball program. And we never had that before in the fall. Fall was definitely a football time. And so, and I did play volleyball in high school and went on to play at the collegiate level. So I saw the opportunities increasing when they started to look at where the monies was being spent and trying to make that more equal across the sexes.
Do you think that, I mean, is that strictly about sports or is it about something bigger in your mind?
Well, Title IX really wasn't specifically about sports. It was about education and giving women an equal opportunity in education. And that, of course, spilled into the athletics. And so I think that was bigger. Billie Jean King was a good friend of Charles Schulz, who penned the Peanuts series. And he did a whole set of comics around the Title IX and Peppermint Patty being that athlete that was a girl, but everybody wanted on their team and so forth. And there were some great
whereas comics. Charlie Brown can't do it.
Not so much. Not the quarterback we all would like to have on our teams. But he was a great organizer, so we appreciated that. So I think that, definitely Title IX was bigger, and it's still even today, as that 45th anniversary of that, we need to continue that dialogue.
So as a college athlete, you were just saying that you played volleyball in college. How did that go? Where did you play, and what was your college sports career like?
So it was interesting because even with the program being in place, the facilities was very different than the men's facilities, and the girls' gym was smaller and didn't hold as many folks.
Yeah, you just put girls' gym in quotes.
Yeah, they had girls' gym and boys' gym still even in that time, you know, well after Title IX. And why do they call it that? Why didn't they call them the Lampkin Gym or the Martindale Gym. They called it the boys' gym and the girls' gym. And so even our training facilities, although they were nice, were subpar to what the men's teams had.
Subpar in what way?
Smaller. And they were in a different, not as convenient area of campus. Didn't have the spectator area. So we actually had a very good team my freshman year, and we had run like 28 or 29 straight matches, which is, I think today, even a record, and went on to win 50 matches that year. And Northwest, Missouri State was where I went. They had not won, volleyball team had not won more than 30 matches in any year up to that. We had won 50 that year. And we did end up getting in play in the boys' gym latter part of that season. So it kind of begs the question of, why do we have to earn that where it's just given to the guys?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me. Like, there's this recurring theme in your experience that when you achieve in sports at a certain level, you basically get to become a boy.
Exactly, or at least get the opportunity that they have. So it's like the guys get the stuff automatically, the girls have to earn it.
You know, did you guys have fan support? You're winning more games in a row than any team before you.
You know, we did, and it was mostly our friends and who we could contact and drum up interest. It wasn't a de facto type of thing, where a social thing on campus would be you go to a football game, or a social thing on campus you go to the basketball game. It tended to be going to the men's basketball game, or, you know, there wasn't a lot of social energy around going to the women's game.
Did you ever think about sports as something that you would do as part of your adult life after college, or did you think, like, this has been great, I'm a successful college athlete, but this will now be a hobby for me?
I would have loved to, at that point in my life, been able to use sports as my livelihood or whatever. I went to a more traditional role. I became a computer science major, and I'm in IT still today. But I used that to be able to give back and to do the STORM. And we do a lot of things with young girls, and we are uniquely postured to be a good role model for girls and show them that it's okay to be strong, it's okay to be assertive. And we use and different body types. What's nice about football is you can be a very small woman, a very large woman, fast, slow, and we can find a position for you. And so I like football and being able to show the girls that they can excel no matter what their body type is and what their strengths are, and be a part of a team and be productive and have a great experience.
I know that you haven't had the chance to see the movie Battle of the Sexes yet, but there is a scene where Billie Jean King has just found out that men playing in a tournament she's in are getting paid 8 times more than women. And she and her lawyer are challenging that. Here's the management response.
The men are simply more exciting to watch. They are. They're faster.
Facts.
And they're stronger.
Fact.
And they're more competitive.
Just a fact.
It's not your fault. It's just biology.
That's not my point. We sell the same amount of tickets.
I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
You know, her arguments are based on dollars and cents, not fairness or justice or anything like that. And it's still not going to happen. Do the ideas people have about men versus women in sports, do they ever feel like this frustrating uphill battle? Or as a person who's competitive by nature, on some level, does that work as motivation?
It's certainly motivating, but it is certainly frustrating. And that is still happening today. What Billie Jean ran into then still happens today if you consider the United States women's soccer players. And that the fact that they do sell more and they are more popular and there's more people watching them on TV, so therefore the sponsorships and the commercials can be sold for more, and yet they still make significantly less. That's ludicrous, and it needs to be addressed. I understand that I think the number of fans, I think if you see them in the stands, it's still the same. And so we still see that today, and it's still very frustrating. As far as that men being more competitive or being more enjoyable to watch. I take issue to that. And if you consider specifically the basketball, okay, John Wooden had a great quote, and he had always said, and he's, you know, great men's collegiate basketball coach, and he said the best basketball in the United States is played at the collegiate level, and it's not by men. And even in his era, he understood and he saw the skill that women bring to that game. And he and when you can't overpower someone with strength and you have to use skill and finesse, then that makes for a better game. And I would challenge that comment now that there are soccer, I think, is another situation where women use finesse and style and put on a better show than the men.
Well, I want to actually take very quickly, we don't have a lot of time, but we have a caller who wants to comment kind of on a similar topic. Katie from Raytown, good morning.
Hi.
We don't have a lot of time, but what do you want to share?
I just wanted to say, like, FCKC, the women's soccer team here in Kansas City, is a championship team, and I went to one of their games a couple weekends ago and was shocked. Like, they play at Swope Park, just, like, right on the ground level, and it was almost, like, less than, like, a high school quality field. And, like, in the same parking lot when I was, like, parking, the parking attendant was like, are you here for, like, the under-8-year-old boys team, like, game? Are you here for, like, FCKC? And I was like, what? Like, I can't believe these things are happening right across the street from one another. And that it's cool that, like, the kids got to play so close to, like, Olympic gold medalists just across, like, the gravel road. But it's just so blows my mind that, like, it's that way. And it's, like, it would be great if it was still that way for men's sports, where, like, kids and the public could be so close to the athletes without so much, I don't know, pomp. And
yeah.
And
but then since it's not, it's sort of like, wait, what?
That's a very good comment, Katie, and I would underline that and challenge everyone that's listening to this, is how we change that is by getting out and going to those games. And when FCKC, and I've been to those games, and I agree with you, when you can consider where they play and consider where KC Sporting plays, that's a problem. And we can change that by getting out and attending the women's events, the collegiate events, the soccer events, and use our dollars and our feet to vote. And that's
so
how,
like,
we can change.
Once the crowds are spilling over out of the capacity of that facility, that's what motivates the change?
Exactly. Exactly.
Does, I mean, for you, like, what's the most rewarding thing about being in a women's football league? We've heard a lot about the challenges, but
lots of challenges. I think the most rewarding thing is seeing the women progress in their health and wellness goals. When I started the Storm, it was definitely, I was starting a football team because I wanted to play. And what I found over the decades and years that I've done this is that everybody comes with a story. And some women are just looking for another challenge. Some women are looking to lose weight and wanting a support structure. Some people have just lost weight and now they're wanting to be it's a new life for them. Maybe they're coming out of an abusive relationship. Everybody has a story. And what I found is that the Storm can help them through their journey. Whatever they're looking for, we can help. And I found that the Storm is more of a women's health and wellness organization now, where football is the means and not the ends. And so what is most exciting for me is to see those women's personal journeys and see them progress through those and see their shorts getting smaller, you know, shorts getting bigger, you know, whatever it is that they're trying to achieve, whether they can go from 10 push-ups to 20 push-ups, et cetera, that enablement.
So it's about achievement or, like, pushing yourself.
Exactly. And seeing them achieve that is what really motivates me.
Well, Nance Wernis of KC Storm, thank you so much for talking to me and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
Last year, Shawnee Mission East was dealing with a problem of sexual assault, resulting in a citywide movement where students wore black to stop attacks. David Muhammad teaches social studies at the school. He's also a hip-hop artist, and he wrote a song addressing sexual assault, then invited his students to collaborate on it. Here's the story of the song Fallen Roses.
He was the quiet kid from next door. They used to talk through paper cups while lying on the floor. He had her trust and was her first school slow dance.
This isn't a song that I made for people to dance to. I wanted it to be something where someone sits down, maybe in solitude or in a group, and listens to it and reflects. The first two sections tell the story.
Saw her at the club in favorite skirt and gave a compliment. Offered her a drink. Alcohol clouded his consciousness.
Many times it's the guy who does it isn't always some stranger. It's someone that maybe a girl knows, or he's intoxicated and he's had feelings of attraction for a while and it escalates.
Baby, why'd you break my heart? My love is not beside you. Assumed you aren't like other guys.
Harper Mundy is a student of mine. She's a senior this year. She has a voice that is powerful, but at the same time delicate. So I spoke to her and I asked, I said, this is the topic. It's a heavy topic. Are you okay with your name being attached to something like this? And she was 100%.
He was feeling interest. Figured if persistent, he could make a beat come into it. Couldn't see the signs. Lights was dim, so he ain't see fear in her eyes. And he said,
baby, don't you break my heart. Just let me lay beside you. Chasing like them other guys. Don't want no one besides you.
On the second chorus is another former student of mine, Charlie Jensen, and he is currently a sophomore at the University of Missouri. Charlie Jensen is a member of a fraternity, and he felt like this was a message that needed to be heard amongst his peers.
And plus, you know me better than them other guys, kept protection in his wallet for.
And the first thing I asked him was, how do you feel men will take it? And he thought that they were ready for it. At least on the campus that he goes to, there's been a lot of efforts to spread awareness about sexual assault on campus.
She pushed away his hips and gave the cold shoulder, but the ego deep within told him move closer.
The chorus itself, I wanted something that was, that it sounded as innocent as the female is typically, and the male sounding as innocent as his ignorance. You know, I wanted his innocence to match his ignorance.
Lots of love to give.
She said she wasn't ready for the intimate. He tried to tell her it would only be a good time. He said, baby girl, you know.
I wanted to get outside of the traditional hip hop sound. I wanted to go more acoustic, and then I wanted it to get heavier as the song got heavier in concept.
She whispered in his ear.
We brought in Andrew Telthorst, who is a senior at Piper High School, and he's in a band with Harper Mundy, and he brought in his acoustic guitar, and I said, okay, I'm gonna rap my verses, and I want to see where you take it.
So faith is dead, my eyes no longer cry.
And he said, well, what sound do you want? I said, just see where it takes you, but don't overpower me. And within two takes, he completely nailed it.
Yeah, this message goes out to all the fellas. We got a man up for real. Raise our seeds right. Shoot these queens right. Pete, yo.
The third part is my message to men. So I really wanted to rap that part very aggressively.
From a young age, we view women as our property. Enslave them to billboards, then we hold up the idolatry. Place them on a pedestal with perfect weight and skinny jeans. Photoshop them natural flaws and sexualize their Disney queens.
And then the last vocalist, you may not notice him, but his name is Davis Vaughn, and he's currently a senior at Shawnee Mission East as well. And he does the low bass tone on the third portion of the song.
Show her that you're in control. Question is, who do we blame when women's voice ain't in the boat? Society says rap.
I had never gotten that vulnerable in music. And I think as a man, when you make something like that, it makes you reflect on what imperfections you've had with women. I'm a husband, I'm a father of a daughter. And I have another girl in the way, and I felt like wow, this is heavy.
But they ain't gotta pay the toll. Roger Elvin.
And then I wanted to cut out all sound and just talk to men. That way there was no excuse for not hearing my message.
Yo, fellas, listen up. Let this sink into your pores. If she tell you no, don't push for more or think it's hard to get. Not yours to interpret. Your convictions ain't legit. Our rhetoric creates a norm that opens doors to negligence. Gotta change the culture so our ladies feel less targeted. Shouldn't have to fight for women's rights. What's there to argue with? Scared of losing privilege. We teach women self-defense, but who teaches assailants? Actions start as spoken verbs that transfer into narrative. Seeds get laid in locker rooms, but that's where altered motives bloom. News.
That was teacher David Muhammad with some of his students from Shawnee Mission East and other schools too, talking about their song Fallen Roses, which has just been released. The story was produced by KCUR's CJ Janovy for our Story of a Song series. And that's a wrap for this show today. You can listen back to anything you heard at kcur.org/centralstandard. We talked with a women's studies professor, a film critic, and a female football player about the movie Battle of the Sexes earlier in the show. kcur.org/centralstandard to check it out. Tomorrow, the food critics will be here to talk about outdoor dining in Kansas City, including an investigation into the growing popularity of beer gardens and also a conversation with the winner of a squirrel cook-off. Tomorrow at 10. Tune in. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan, with lots of help from intern Tom Taylor. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Up to Date is next, so don't miss it on KCUR.